The Holy Gospel according to Matthew. When Jesus saw the crowds, he went up the mountain, and after he sat down, his disciples came to him. Then he began to speak and taught them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you." The Gospel of the Lord. What does it mean to be blessed? We often talk about blessing in terms of success or happiness or how we feel or how fortunate or privileged we are. But in today's gospel, Jesus gives us a radically different understanding of what it means to be blessed. In verse 1 of today's gospel reading, Matthew tells us that Jesus has left the crowds and gone up a mountain, a lot like Moses ascending Mount Sinai to receive the law. Jesus is about to give the famous Sermon on the Mount. These are his very first public words to his disciples. And if you look closely, you'll note that Matthew says Jesus is going to teach them. We call this a sermon, but it's really a lecture, a class. This is the first day of Discipleship 101, and the first lesson is the Beatitudes. A beatitude is a statement that certain people are privileged or honorable in some way. Jesus didn't invent this as a teaching tool, but he's going to use it to challenge the disciples' expectations. Last week, Jesus preached that the kingdom of heaven had come near, and he had called his disciples. Today, he's going to start explaining to them what that kingdom looks like, what discipleship means. And so he says, "Blessed are those who are disheartened, downtrodden. Blessed are those who suffer loss. Blessed are the meek, the gentle, the humble. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for justice." And only halfway through this list, we want to say, wait, what? These people are the ones who get rewarded? And the answer is yes. These groups are those the Bible consistently sees as defended by God. And they are not only promised the kingdom, but also those things that Israel expects for that promised future, when God's kingdom comes and God's will is done on earth as it is in heaven. They are promised a day when sorrow and crying will be no more, a day when the promised land is at last obtained, a day when hunger and thirst is finally satisfied, a day when justice will prevail. That's already a tall order. And Jesus is only half done. Blessed are the compassionate. Blessed are those who do not serve two masters, but serve God with all their heart. Blessed are the reconcilers, the nonviolent. Blessed are those who endure persecution for the sake of justice. With this second group, there's a shift happening. We've moved from a sort of passive group that represents the vulnerable and the easily victimized, to an active group, a group of doers, a group that does things that look a lot like what Jesus will continue to lecture the disciples on throughout the rest of the gospel. First, let's look at these statements a bit more closely. These are not human virtues. If you and I wrote a list of blessings, we would probably say, "Blessed are the healthy, the wealthy, the smart, the happy, the powerful, the beautiful, the winners, the nobility, the haves, the high achievers." But those are not the people blessed in this kingdom. Nothing here is what human wisdom expects. In this lesson, Jesus flips all of our human values and expectations upside down. trying to get us to see things from God's point of view. Jesus blesses what is foolish to shame the wise, blesses what is weak to shame the strong, blesses the have-nots to bring down the haves. The Sermon on the Mount spans over 100 verses, and with just these first 10, Jesus tears down our idea of what blessing looks like and starts rebuilding it. These are the values and virtues of the kingdom of heaven. Second, these are genuine blessings, not Robert Schuller's be happy attitudes. Jesus says, "For theirs is, for they will be." These are gifts from God, not warm fuzzies. They are promises given, not commands to be fulfilled. And that makes them good news, gospel, not law. This distinction between gospel and law is one of the cornerstones of our Lutheran theology. The law says, if then. The if names a condition to be fulfilled, and the then names the reward. If you work hard, then you will succeed. If you drive 55, then you will not get a ticket. If you eat your veggies, then you will have dessert. That makes us the actors. The law casts me back on myself to fulfill the requirement. But the gospel is different. The gospel says, because, therefore. Because Christ has died, therefore, you are forgiven. Because they are poor in spirit, therefore, theirs is the kingdom. Because they mourn, therefore, they will be comforted. Christ has indeed ascended this mountain like Moses did on Mount Sinai. But when Christ turns around and speaks, the word is not law, but gospel. As the Lutheran theologian James Nestigen says, the gospel says, Moses is dead, Christ is risen. Third, there's a movement here, a forward motion of ethics, of virtue, of good deeds, driving these blessings that will continue to inform the rest of the Sermon on the Mount and the rest of Matthew's gospel. The line is being blurred between these two groups. These aren't simply blessings on 9 different types of people, but they are blessings for the whole Christian community. Blessing and discipleship are being intertwined. Last week, Jesus said, "The kingdom of heaven is near," and this section begins and ends with the promise of the kingdom. These are the blessings for the true disciples in the Christian community. They are blessings for those who model their lives on the one who is himself all of these things. Christ became poor that we might inherit the kingdom. He mourns with us and for us. He is meek, gentle, and humble in heart. He satisfies our hunger with his own flesh and blood. He has compassion for us that we might have it for others. He calls us to repent, to change our minds, that we might see God. He adopts us into God's family and into the family business of forgiveness and reconciliation. And he asks us to follow him down a path of justice that just might get us killed. Then in verse 11, Jesus makes explicit what has been implicit, just in case the disciples thought they had been left out of all these blessings. Blessed are you when people revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. And then Jesus gives the first command, rejoice and be glad. For your reward is great in heaven, for in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. Surely the disciples were hoping for more of an earthly reward than a heavenly one. Something a bit nicer. You know, maybe, blessed are you, the chosen few, for your life will be easy and filled with sunshine and unicorns. But that's not how blessing works in this kingdom. These are the blessings of a crucified God, a God whose power is made known in weakness, a God whose foolishness is wiser than human wisdom. Blessing in the kingdom is the way of the cross. It is a stumbling block, foolishness. So what are we to do with all of these blessings? Are we to simply sit here and bask in our blessedness? Not quite. These may be unconditional promises, but again, they are built on a foundation of ethics. True discipleship for Matthew isn't passive. It is an active response to the gospel that involves good deeds. The true disciple does justice, loves kindness, and walks humbly with their God. The true disciple does the right thing, speaks the truth, avoids gossip, honors friend and neighbor. The true disciple is willing to live life with the people on the margins, willing to stand in solidarity with the scapegoats of this world, just as Christ himself became a scapegoat. God doesn't care about our offerings or our singing or our standing, sitting, kneeling, and bowing. All of our debates about whether we do things this way or that way in worship, it's all irrelevant, says Micah. What matters is whether we are living the values of the kingdom. Because if we are not, nothing else we do is worth arguing about. Blessing in this kingdom of heaven is about a way of life. Jesus says, "Blessed are the outsiders, for God is on their side. And blessed are you when the world casts you out for treating the outsider as if they're blessed." Blessed are you, not when people congratulate you or compliment you or respect you, but blessed are you when people insult you because you dare to defend the victims and scapegoats of this world whom Christ has deemed worthy of blessing. Blessed are you when people attack you because you dare to build bridges instead of walls. Blessed are you when people slander you because you dare to believe that God's kingdom comes and God's will is done when the prisons and asylums and ghettos of this world stand empty, when the inmates and the outcasts and the refugees of this world are welcomed home as our brothers, our sisters, our parents, our children. Blessed are you when the world persecutes you for doing justice, for you are in good company. They did the same to the prophets who were before you. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, executed for his opposition to Nazism. Martin Luther King, assassinated for his leadership in the civil rights movement. Bishop Oscar Romero, assassinated for his opposition to government oppression of the poor in El Salvador. When the world persecutes you for doing justice, rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven.